The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123, or email to Cooley at admworld.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's July 16th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing. He's in Normal, Illinois. And then a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons right here in Champaign County. In agricultural news, agencies in Washington are fighting over ag inspectors. There are some accusations that suggest the so-called extension of the 2002 Farm Bill is just a ploy. And Brazil has filed a WTO complaint against U.S. farm support payments. Dave Dickey will have details of these stories later in the half hour. And then we'll go through one more time why it might be that all those planes in the air over the past month weren't particularly necessary. I went to Chicago over the weekend and saw one on my way down Route 47 to Champaign yesterday. And hey, don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Monday edition of WOILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. September wheat at 6.01¾, 19 cents lower today. December futures were down 17 and a quarter for the soft red at 6.18 in Chicago. From the corn pit, September contract 3.34¾, the 20 cent limit lower. December contract down the limit at 3.48½, the March at 3.61¾ down the limit. And next year's December futures down 16 and three quarters at 3.91½. August soybean futures limit lower down 50 at 8.71¾. September's 8.81¼ down 50. And November beans at 8.98¾ down 50 for this year. Next year's November beans were down 40 cents at 9.05¼. August bean meal futures 235.70 down $19.90. August bean oil at 37.23 down 0.74 for the day. At the Mercantile Exchange, August live cattle 27.5 cents lower at 91.35. October futures at 96.35 were up a nickel for the day for the live cattle. August feeder cattle up $1.30 at 115.15, and the September futures at 115.77½ were $1.10 higher. Lean hog futures July contract 17.5 cents higher at $69.20, and the bellies trading 92.50 were up 50 on the afternoon. In the crude oil from the outside markets, the current trade at $74.13 a barrel, 20 cents higher in the nearby August. September's at $74.20 or 7 higher, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 13,951, and it's just about 44 points higher for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Monday afternoon to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Kurt Kimmel of Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois. You drew the bad straw for the week, didn't you, Kurt?
Boy, it's right off the bat here. Now I know everybody probably wants to know what's going to happen the rest of the week now.
Well, that's the deal. So we were down the limit. Tell me what's going to happen tonight.
Well, we'll probably follow through some. The grain market in general has been notorious, not really following through with limit moves, so hopefully, trying to be a little optimistic, hopefully won't fall through too much here. The open orders, or unfilled orders, that is, to sell on corn was about 40,000 contracts and about 17,000 contracts of beans to be sold that did not get filled. One of the most popular ways to sort of figure out where the market's at is to look at the synthetic and the option trades, and doing that, corn would be about 3.5 cents lower and the beans about 4 cents lower. But, you know, things can change in a hurry overnight. So probably what's more important is to wait to see what the overnight weather maps say, see what the morning weather maps say. Then probably what's more important than that is to actually see what rain amounts materialize overnight. But this is sort of a classic. It sort of takes the roar of the lion to make the market go up, but the squeak of the mouse to see it collapse. It's one of these classics where just the forecast alone sent everybody in the defensive posture. We will have some margin call liquidation because there was quite a bit of optimism there late last week where a lot of the traders bought a little too high, Todd.
So the squeak of the mouse is calls for cooler weather, well, not exactly cool, but cooler than expected, and a little rainfall?
Yeah. You know, instead of getting to the triple digits here in the eastern belt, we'll top out in the low 90s. You know, instead of not seeing any rain at all, there will be some spotty, showery stuff. Our weatherman says the best chance, northern Illinois and the northern regions, they can get up to maybe 2 inches of rain. For the central part on east, we could see maybe a quarter to three quarters on about 70% coverage. Probably the most interesting places to watch would be that southern Minnesota, northern Iowa, see what materializes there, and Ohio. We've got quite a few of the producers we work with in Ohio. They've really been shortchanged here in the last 2 months. I mean, they're talking a half an inch in the last 2 months, so it's not good at all. To go with that theme or thought, this afternoon's crop conditions report is expected to show some additional deterioration, anywhere from 3 to 4% for corn and beans both. And I imagine those areas I mentioned will probably show the biggest hits, you know, Minnesota, northern Iowa, and Ohio. The rest of the Corn Belt will probably show stable conditions compared to a week ago.
If you've got positions on and you're able to maintain the margins, what do you think you ought to do?
Well, that's a good question, and this is, you know, guys get tired of me saying this. You got to determine if you're a hedger, producer, or a trader. You know, it's entirely two different things. As a producer hedger, we've been promoting to, you know, do the sell up selling because when it collapses, it will collapse just like it did. You know, if you've got short hedges on, you're getting some money back, for say, and you've locked in some prices, stick with it. If you sold your cash grain and own it on the board, you know, you got to use some money management here and determine where to get in, where to get out. Probably one of the most popular things short term to help you enter and exit is probably a technical type of program. Probably the most one we've got guys following right now is following this 18 to 20 day moving average. Whenever you're above it, you need to be long. Whenever you're short, below, you need to be short the market. Now, that's easier said than done, but that seems to be the most popular way to determine where you should be. But you know, when you start getting an atmosphere like this, limit moves, just about anything. It was really hard to get to work in a manageable situation.
What did the squawk box sound like today? What were they talking about other than the weather? Anything?
Mainly weather. Is the main thing. The news was somewhat light. We did sell 101,000 tons of corn to unknown destination, so that's the next thing we need to watch on this price break to see what comes forward here. As far as exports go, that's the function of the market, is to go down and stimulate demand, find the demand. After the close, they did suggest that Egypt's going to be in the market for 55,000 to 60,000 tons of wheat, so they're going to use this price break to be a buyer. The other thing is the U.S. dollar, it continues to erode away, so it makes our export markets fairly attractive still, per se. But the main thing is the weather. That's going to be the key dominant factor because, as we mentioned before, when you look at the supply-demand balance sheet, when you bump that yield up and down 5, 6, 7 bushels an acre on corn and the bean yield up and down 1, 2 bushels an acre on beans, that changes the bottom line more than anything, Todd.
Anything in the mercantile exchange we ought to discuss for the day?
Well, I found it interesting that hogs had a huge move last week due to talk that China would be interested in U.S. pork. And all of a sudden, news over the weekend that China blocks some U.S. pork and poultry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All of a sudden, we're seeing some quarantine take place on salmonella, tainted chicken, and some other things. It's amazing what type of news can take place there. in the cattle complex. The main thing there was just an awful lot of spreading here from the October to the August as traders sort of rolled these August longs into the deferred months here. But the, as far as the meat sector goes, we're looking at bigger supplies of meat domestically, but the overall demand in the meat sector remains really strong.
Well, let's hope when we talk again next week that we'll be looking at a price move up as opposed to down.
Yeah, these down days, I hate to start the week off here, but I wouldn't rule out some type of bounce here towards the end of the week, and I have a feeling Mike will probably end the week with much better news than what I started with.
Let's hope so.
Very good.
Thanks much, Kurt. Kurt Kimmel, of course, with Grainfield Marketing out of Normal, Illinois, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report on Mondays. He referred to Mike Zuzulo, who joins us on the Closing Mark Report on Fridays.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with farmers for over 100 years to advance agriculture and farming way of life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Just after the bottom of the hour, a meteorologist from Chesapeake Energy in Chicago will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own Mike Sola says tonight across the two-state region, in the north and central sections, it'll be partly to mostly cloudy. A few scattered showers, some thunderstorms, says Mike Sola. In the south, partly cloudy. Lows will range from around 60 in northeastern Indiana to 70 in southwestern Illinois. Mike says tomorrow in northeastern Illinois and northern Indiana, partly cloudy, some scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Elsewhere, partly sunny, a slight chance for a few scattered showers and thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow from around 80 in northern Indiana to 95 in southwestern Illinois. Now tomorrow, minimum relative humidity levels will climb in the mid-40s in eastern Indiana, up to 60% in southwestern Illinois. Wind speeds between 8 and 16 miles an hour. The heat index up to the middle 80s in the northeastern part of Indiana, near 100 in southern and western Illinois.
In agricultural news, congressional Democrats appear headed for a squabble over whether agricultural inspectors should be reassigned to the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service or remain with the Department of Homeland Security's Customs and Border Protection Unit. Senate lawmaker Joe Lieberman sent a letter to the chair and ranking member of the Senate Agriculture Committee warning not to use the Farm Bill as a legislative vehicle to transfer agricultural inspectors from Homeland Security. The Bush administration also opposes the move, despite a recent government accountability report finding that since inspectors were moved from APHIS, the number of agricultural inspections has declined at key U.S. entry points. House Agriculture Committee Chairman Colin Peterson says talk among Republicans about extending Farm Bill 2002 is a plot to keep Congress controlled by Democrats from passing a farm bill. In Peterson's words, Republicans don't want anything to pass in the Congress. The current farm bill expires on September 30th. Peterson says Southern GOP lawmakers are leading the call for extension, fearing a new bill might contain stricter payment limits. Friday, Peterson told reporters that payment limits would do the most good to show reform. Peterson says he has asked the Congressional Budget Office what it would cost to end the three-entity rule. Peterson last week warned USDA Secretary Mike Johanns that if Congress does not pass a new farm bill, an extension of the current bill is not assured, and that Johanns must be prepared to implement the antiquated 1949 permanent farm law that Congress suspends each time it writes a new farm bill. Meanwhile, Brazil has filed another complaint against the U.S. at the World Trade Organization. This time, Brazil alleges that U.S. farm support payments exceeded WTO limits. U.S. Deputy Ag Secretary Chuck Connors says the U.S. can expect more of the same if a new farm bill is not passed.
Last month, Canada requested a WTO dispute settlement panel to review and to take a look at our agricultural subsidies and whether we have exceeded our limits. The fact remains that our support programs under the current farm bill continue to come under attack.
Ranking Senate Agriculture Committee member Saxby Chambliss says the WTO complaint misses the mark and will erode U.S. support for the Doha round of world trade talks. A House Agricultural Appropriations Subcommittee approved full implementation of mandatory country of origin labeling for red meat, fresh fruits, vegetables, and peanuts by September 30th of next year. USDA estimates cost of implementation at $8 million. Illinois Representative Ray LaHood says he will offer an amendment to lengthen the time for implementation. LaHood opposes mandatory cool. And China has suspended imports from Tyson Foods and several other U.S. meat processors, claiming they are tainted with bacteria and a number of chemicals. According to China's General Administration of Quality Supervision, Tyson imports were contaminated with salmonella, and Cargill frozen pork ribs contained a leanness-enhancing feed additive. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, inviting you to visit our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, up next, the crop dusters have been very busy across the Midwest this season, and for the most part, the crop scientists at the University of Illinois say there is no good reason for the flying spray booms to be in use on corn. Crop dusters are really fun to watch. They swoop in just inches above a field of corn and make one pass after another, rising and turning and diving at each end. Then, as they appear to literally drive atop those rows, a mist appears from just below the wings. This year, that mist in the Midwest is almost certainly a fungicide that University of Illinois agronomist Emerson Nafziger says is not necessary. He penned an article for the June 29 edition of the University of Illinois Pest Management and Crop Development Bulletin that openly questioned why a farmer would choose to use a fungicide when the early season dry conditions in the eastern Corn Belt prevented the development of the very foliar diseases a fungicide is expected to control.
My colleagues liked it, but it certainly didn't keep any planes on the ground. And I put in data on the our data. And, you know, I made the statement there that we have pretty clear evidence that this fungicide headline, basically, because that company's been most aggressive and they've paid for research to try to figure out what it might be doing. So this whole plant health euphemism that they came up with is a, you know, we think this stuff will increase yields without disease, but we don't want to put that in writing kind of thing. You see, they believe fully, and I don't disagree, that this material might have some growth regulator activity. And they've talked about it reducing respiration rates, which in plants can be a positive thing. But I went on to say that in my average over the 10 trials I had to drag data out from was about 6 bushel, which isn't enough. That doesn't pay for the material in the application.
Headline is a fungicide produced by BASF. The company funded some of the research Emerson Nafziger has cited. There are two different issues at stake here. The first is whether or not a fungicide application to corn for something other than disease control can cause a predictable yield boost. The second is environmental in nature. Let's deal with the first issue. Plain and simple, University of Illinois Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger says in most of the Illinois fields sprayed, there were no economically threatening foliar diseases to control. So the planes were in the air, in his opinion, trying to capture a yield boost. It's a boost science cannot yet predict, and that is likely to vary widely in intensity. He believes the planes should have been on the ground. So does extension entomologist Kevin Steffi. Many of the fungicide applications were tank-mixed with an insecticide. Steffi says if those fields were not scouted for insects, then there is no reason for the insecticide application.
If these insecticides are being applied as preventives, and many of them are, they're applying insecticides unnecessarily for insects that are not at economic levels. And we're going back to the days where I've seen some advertisements for controlling a list of 5 or 6 insects in corn, not only this year, but reducing their numbers for next year. That is not IPM. It is not a long-term effective approach, and in fact will probably result in some problems.
IPM stands for Integrated Pest Management, and while there are many definitions, it is generally accepted that chemical control is only used necessarily, or when no other means are available. Kevin Steffi's colleague at the U of I, Emerson Nafziger, certainly agrees that the planes in the air spraying fungicides and sometimes insecticides over Illinois corn this season were not the best idea.
So sort of covering the world here with fungicides and insecticides, I guess, isn't along the lines of the IPM that people have talked about for so long. And we're kind of concerned about it just as a practice. We worry that things like this fall into the normal practice category where you just do it without thinking. And fungicides and insecticides, because of what they do and because of what they cost, should probably never be just done without thinking. And we are concerned that that might be happening in some cases.
Think first. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Chip Jorstad in Champaign at 217-378-7633. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
On this Monday afternoon, we're joined to take a look at the cash grain market by Brian Stark. He's with the Andersons right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Brian.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, did the phones ring there today?
You know, they were pretty quiet. I think everybody kind of had their mouth on the floor and had trouble picking it off there today. It was kind of a rude awakening. You go from an extreme dry, hot forecast in the western belt with this ridge to all of a sudden dissipating, and more models last night showing better rain chances and moderate temperatures. So obviously that impacted the market today, and with 33,000 contracts offered for sale on the CBOT in corn at the close, I suspect tonight's overnight trade will open lower as well.
It'll probably open lower, but the synthetic isn't too much lower, is it?
No, it's about 23 lower on Dease corn. The beans were about 54 lower after the close. So, no, it shouldn't be too bad. And some of those offers will probably get pulled, but it's all about the weather. I mean, that's the driving factor. And I think now the market will look towards the ratings to see kind of where we're at here this afternoon. Corn, I think, is expected to decline 2 to 4 points. And based on conversations we've had, there's still problem areas in the belt. I don't think this is done by any stretch of anybody's imagination, but what people have to get more in the mindset of is this just another down day. It's just that everything's in greater magnitude now with the higher volatility in the commodity market.
Speaking of that volatility, will you be taking protection overnight?
Yes, down 5 cents from our conventional bid on corn and beans today.
And what's the basis doing in the face of these big drops?
Basis has been fairly steady. You know, last week, new crop dropped another nickel in corn and around another nickel in beans. It's very weak to begin with. Obviously looking at the face of a decently sized corn crop and obviously beans being squeezed out of the equation because you've got this disconnect between the board wanting more acres from somebody going into spring of 08, but nobody wants the beans this fall or right away. So obviously bean basis is historically low, and corn basis will eventually get lower if this crop materializes as good as everybody thinks it is.
And what are your bids for the day?
325 cash corn, fall 313. Cash soybeans 822 and fall 839.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Todd.
Brian Stark is with the Andersons, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Monday afternoons. In just about 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. The folks from Chesapeake Energy should join us from their Chicago office. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Celebrated tenor Jerry Hadley was taken off life support today, nearly a week after an apparent suicide attempt left him with a severe brain injury. State police in New York say the 55-year-old Illinois native and University of Illinois graduate shot himself with an air rifle last week at his home. He'd been on life support since his arrival at the hospital. A family spokeswoman, Celia Novo, says Hadley was taken off the systems today and medical personnel are making him comfortable. She says his death could come at any time. Hadley's career included creating the title role in composer John Harbison's Great Gatsby. He grew up in Manlius near Peoria and earned degrees from both Bradley University and the U of I School of Music. The Illinois Clean Coal Review Board is promising to give $2.5 million in grants to a proposed coal-fired power plant that Illinois is trying to land. The group says it'll put up the money toward production of the future gen plant if either Tuscola or Mattoon wins the project over two sites in Texas. A hearing has begun today in federal court over shipments for waste from the destruction of VX nerve agent in Vermilion County. Environmental groups want to stop the Army from shipping the waste from Indiana's Newport Chemical Depot to Texas for disposal, saying that waste is more dangerous than the Army acknowledges. State auditors say Indiana ended the fiscal year with a surplus of about $1.28 billion, but little of the money is available for spending. Much of it set aside in the state's rainy day savings account and other reserve funds. About half of what's left is earmarked to make up back payments to local governments, so about $252 million remains in spendable cash. Democrats, who were in the minority when the last budget was approved in Indiana, said it was balanced on the backs of property taxpayers. Property taxes on homeowners in Indiana have been projected to increase by 24% statewide this year, but rebates are expected to soften the blow. Thousands of immigrant rights activists are expected to turn out tonight for a protest in Lake County, Illinois. The Waukegan City Council will be voting to reconsider its application for authorization to give city police the authority to begin deportation proceedings for illegal immigrants convicted of violent crimes. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to AM 580 WILL Urbana. This is the Closing Market Report. On a Monday afternoon, we're joined to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast by Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Mark.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, the weather turns all things in Chicago, and it turned the market lower today on ideas that it wouldn't be quite as hot and there'd be some rainfall across the Midwest. What do you say?
Well, at least compared to how we left things on Friday, there are two items of note. Number one, it looks like the ridge of high pressure, which is the driving force of the pattern, its movement into the Midwest is a little bit later. So instead of, you know, how we ended things last week with the ridge moving into the western portion of the Midwest by late this week, it looks like it will begin to influence the Midwest around Sunday and Monday, so around 2 days later. The other important item of note is that since the ridge is moving in just a couple of days later, that does increase the window of opportunity for rainfall across the Midwest. And we're going to be seeing that here over the next several days as several upper-level disturbances track in this northwest flow jet stream pattern across the Midwest. And as a result, we do see showers and thunderstorms developing over the next several days, basically from now through Thursday. But it looks like the more widespread significant activity is going to be biased more east than west. In fact, our coverage of rainfall here for this week is around 65% of the eastern belt, receiving amounts over 3/10 of an inch, and some areas receiving up to 1.5 localized 2-inch amounts, even some heavier amounts, whereas the western Midwest, and we're talking about areas west of the Mississippi River, we expect around 35% coverage. So better rain event east versus west. And so as a result, still some of those dry areas out west, it's going to be tough to get rainfall.
And speaking of the dry areas, can you give me a little more insight into how Ohio is faring and parts of, I suppose, western or eastern Indiana? They've been awfully dry as well.
Yeah, certainly for the eastern areas of the Midwest, it really is quite variable. At this time, the driest areas, and we're talking about rainfall over the last 30 days being less than 25% of normal, that includes acreage in southern areas of Michigan, far northeastern Indiana, and far northwestern Ohio. So kind of in around that juncture between where the borders of Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio come together there. That is kind of the epicenter of the dryness in the eastern belt. But as you go further south, actually rainfall has been better here over the past 30 days. And you get into the central areas of Indiana and Ohio, extending down to the Ohio River Valley, rainfall has been more normal, with even a few pockets upwards around 125% of normal.
Over in China, the weather patterns seem to have been mirroring what was happening here in the U.S., at least at the beginning of the season and through a portion of the early summer. Have they been getting rainfall lately?
they have been, both across the corn bean areas as well as the winter wheat areas. Actually, for winter wheat, kind of similar to the U.S., it's causing some issues for winter wheat harvest delays across that area. But for corn and beans, they've been on the active side lately, although that is now beginning to change as a drier pattern is setting up, and that looks to be the case through Monsanto. However, we do not see any significant heat combined with the dryness over the next couple of weeks. So as a result, really no major issues for corn and beans at the present time in China.
Mark, we appreciate you being with us.
My pleasure, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Monday afternoon. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our pre-opening market report. And remember, you can hear today's futures analysis, the cash grain reports, and the weather right there on the web. Just go to WILLAG.org. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.